Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from Philadelphia is Sonia Lawrence. Sonia is Senior Vice President and Enterprise Chief Compliance Officer and Conflicts of Interest Officer at Thomas Jefferson University. First, Sonia, thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Oh, thanks for having me, Adam. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure having you, especially knowing that the snow is coming down as we're talking. Now, you serve as Senior Vice President, Enterprise Chief Compliance Officer, and Institutional Conflict of Interest Officer. They're obviously very complementary roles, but how do they differ?
So, Adam, I think that's a great question. I would say that my role as Compliance Officer is global in nature, right? So, I often say I don't know how to predict what's going to come through my door or my phone or my email. So there are lots of things, variety of risks to identify, balance, and to oversee. But the conflicts of interest role is relatively narrow in scope, but it's incredibly complex, right? So there's oversight and management of certain specific policies that relate to conflicts of interest, partnerships with our scientists, faculty, university officials, while the complexities continue to increase. I would say the scope of work is pretty standard. So if I just had to compare the two, I think compliance is much more global in nature and the conflicts of interest is a little bit more narrow.
Now, there's been an exponential increase in sensitivity to conflict of interest in the medical community. How should compliance and conflicts of interest teams best prepare themselves to meet the new, much harsher and much more scrutinized reality?
Yeah, so I think we are trying to figure out the best ways to do that. So one of the things that I think is a plus, at least for my organization, and maybe not for some who have been involved in some of these controversies, is you learn from other people's experiences. So as you read things in the newspaper, as you look at some of the cases that are coming out, you definitely have to hone in on how is this different from my organization? What things are the same? What can I learn and what can I implement? So I think just really making sure that you keep your finger on the pulse of what is happening helps you align your organization's practices with what is standard and what is acceptable. And beyond that, Adam, I actually think that developing a meaningful presence and establishing relationships across the operational areas that you're going to oversee is incredibly important. If people know where you are and that they can come and find you and ask you and your team questions before conflicts arise, I think you are well ahead of the game. So I can't speak to the extent to which this always works, but I do think that proactive engagement with the folks that may have conflicts is the secret sauce. And then finally, I will say one of the other ways to prepare is to take a look at how the conflict of interest department or staff is resourced. I think the complexities are much greater today than they were 10 years ago, and some organizations may really need to staff up and use technology and automation in a way that we didn't before. So I think it's resources, making sure that you're learning from other people's lessons, and then just being there and being available so that people can reach you.
Yeah, and unfortunately, there's a lot of lessons people can take away from what they read in the press and hear from their peers. Now, you mentioned that it's important to make yourself available. How have you been making your team and yourself available during the pandemic with everyone, you know, spread out and often working from home?
Yeah, you know, I hate to keep saying this, but that's a good question too, Adam. So what we try to do, because we are working virtually for the most part, we do have a system at Jefferson. It's called My Jeff Hub. And I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say this, but it's kind of like a Facebook for Jefferson. So you can connect with people, you can read articles, there are resources there, you can watch videos. And so we've been really leveraging that resource so that people can stay connected. Even if they're not connecting to us personally, they're finding information. It's holiday season. So gift information is out there. You can watch a video. You can ping me and talk with me online if you think that that's something you need to do. So we are trying our very best. And in some ways, we might be a little bit more available to people because we're virtual, because they have many different ways to reach us. And we're sort of in one place and people can find us as opposed to running around to different meetings. So I think we're working at that, but I think it's working out pretty well.
Yeah, it is interesting how there is a sort of effect that people, even though they're more remote, are more accessible because, as you said, they're not in the hall. They're in one place. Now, right. Let's get back to conflict of interest. A key step to conflict of interest management, as you know, is just simply identifying the conflict. What are some techniques you have found to be useful in flagging conflicts of interest?
So I think the probably most fundamental way is to reach out to the stakeholders and ask them to disclose, right? We use an automated system, and at least annually, we're sending out links to people to fill out conflict of interest disclosures, right? So that's probably the most easy, or I would say it's the easiest way to get people to disclose early and often. So once you disclose electronically, you can always update, you can always check in and see what it looks like. So that's one of the techniques that we use to flag conflicts. I think we initiated this campaign called How to Make It Easy to Do the Right Thing. And so we are, again, just trying to reach people with resources, right? Videos, blogs, talking with folks, just so that they know, talk to me about what you're doing. Oh, so you have a part-time job? What do you do for them? Interesting. You might want to disclose that. Let's talk through what that looks like so that we can get you a management plan if you need it. So I think just, again, being available, keeping the resources fresh, relevant, and accessible so people can get information when they need it. And also making it, I don't know if I have the right words for this, making it not just easy, but taking away some of the anxiety that often comes from having to disclose your personal information. Just letting people know that this is a safe space, right? We're not here to prosecute people. We work together to understand what the relationships are and to manage them appropriately. So I think making people feel comfortable to volunteer the information we need is also a great way to flag conflicts.
Now, on the one side, there is that whole issue of making people feel comfortable coming forward. On the other side is the fact that it's often difficult for people to see when they even have a conflict. There's an all-too-human tendency to rationalize the conflict away. What do you find is most successful for overcoming that tendency and leading others both to see the conflict and then ultimately come forward with it?
So I think education is important there. Just helping people to understand that these are the things that are generally considered relationships you need to report because they could lead to a conflict. And one of the ways we try to do that, Adam, is to provide real life scenarios. So if we know that there's a conflict that we recently managed and it's esoteric, unique, or otherwise, hey man, I bet a lot of people have this. We put it out there. We don't use the person's name, but we'll say, you know, Mr. X worked for X company and he did Y, and you know, we identified this as a conflict and this is how we managed it, and nobody died and nobody got fired and it worked out just fine. So I think doing that, providing real life scenarios, and then, you know, also leveraging some publicly available information so that, you know, everybody knows about the open payment system, and we try to get people to go look at yourself on open payment, see what Farmer and others are reporting about you. That's exactly why we want to help you, because we want people to understand that your relationship is being managed and your objectivity is still intact. So I think you're right. Sometimes it's difficult to identify a conflict, or you might rationalize it away. I think, again, just creating that safe space for people to understand that we can talk it through and figure out whether it is a conflict helps people come forward.
Now, you talked already about the fact that conflicts can often be managed. You know, they don't have to always be eliminated. How do you find they can be managed most successfully?
So it depends, right? If you've seen one conflict, it kind of means you've seen one conflict. But I think what we try to do is look toward what are we trying to accomplish in managing a conflict, right? We want objectivity to remain in place. We want to make sure that any of the activities in which a person with a conflict might engage, they align with our mission, our vision, our values. We want to put patients first, for sure. And then we also want to make sure that things are transparent. So when we build a management plan for conflict, we want to keep all of those factors intact. So if we're talking about objectivity, then what checks and balances can we put in place to make sure that the person who has the conflict has someone to answer to, someone who's going to test and make sure that the decisions that are being made are in the best interest of patients, the organization, the community. And then let's put this out there for people to see. Let's be transparent. If Adam's going to have a conflict, let's tell everybody. Adam has a conflict. We're publicly disclosing that. And we want you to know that these are the means through which we're going to use to manage that conflict. So the management plan is really designed to provide oversight, but also to make sure that we can be transparent. And especially to make sure that we're protecting any individuals and making sure that objectivity stays intact.
Well, maintaining objectivity is really the end goal in managing conflicts of interest, and it's always good to see ways in which we can do that. Sonia, thank you so much for sharing these insights with us. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Schnelltaub from SCCE and HCCA. I hope we're able to expand your compliance perspective.